from our listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine, right across from DP&L. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at 293-3914, and we'd be glad to answer any of your firearms-related questions, help you make the selection of a firearm if that's what you're interested in, or talk about some different training opportunities or recreational shooting opportunities you can engage in at our facility. I'm Jeff Pedro in with Mark Avery this afternoon, and we'd be glad to have you call the show, and we'll try to get you on the air as soon as possible if you give us a call at 457-1290. That's 457-1290. Go ahead and give us a call, and we'll get you on the air. And again, purpose of this show is to talk about anything firearms related, whether it's legislation, current status of bills in being considered by the legislature at the present time. If you're looking to buy a gun, if you're looking for training, whatever it might be, if you have some concerns about one gun versus the other, we'll be glad to help you answer those questions and get that information out to the listeners so that maybe they can provide some additional input to help you in that process. I also want to remind our listeners that we offer a full line of training courses at Sim Trainer. We have our a nationally acclaimed First Shots program that's on a monthly basis. We've now had to bump that up to twice a month because of full enrollment status. We have a full class this evening, and the class coming up the third Thursday of the month is already almost full, so we're kind of scheduling into May at the present time. So if you're interested in getting in the First Shots class to get an opportunity to get exposed to the shooting sports, if you just tuned in or you've been interested in getting a gun or finding out about firearms or helping dispel the myth about firearms, and we'd certainly welcome that you come by the range and take that class. Talk to us. We'll be more than glad to get you in that class. That class is excellent for the starting or the beginning novice shooter because it gives you an opportunity to sit in class where we'll talk a little bit about firearm safety and range safety, the basic functional operation of a gun, the parts of a gun, how the gun works, and then you get to go out on the range and have a good time under the direct supervision of our trained staff and shoot that gun for 50 rounds in a controlled environment, and we make some minor corrections at that point. And when you're done, you feel pretty good about the experience. And I know Mark was talking to one of our patrons the other night, and very seldom, if ever, does anybody walk out with other than a smile on their face. And it's a great opportunity. And then we close the class with an hour or 45 minutes in the classroom. We talk about how you can enjoy the shooting sports, whether it be just in a recreational situation. We talk about competition, the shooting competitions that we offer down at Sim Trainer, a variety of other opportunities. So if you're interested in that class, be sure to give us a call and understand that we are scheduling into May at the present time, but it's a great class to get started with your firearm interest. We also offer a basic handgun class, and the basic handgun class is designed for somebody who may or may not have an idea about what they want to purchase as far as a gun, or even if they want to get a gun at all, but it would kind of be the logical next step from First Shots. But you don't have to take First Shots before you go to basic handgun. It certainly can be the springboard class for you, and the advantage to that class is we give you an opportunity to shoot most of the more popular guns that are on the market at the present time, and then you get a chance to actually shoot it, learn how to shoot it correctly, and find out if you really like it before you make the purchase. Another option to the basic class is either private lessons. We offer private lessons to individuals. They come to the range, and if you're not so inclined to be in a class situation, you don't feel comfortable around a lot of people, or just your time schedule doesn't allow for the schedule of time that we've blocked for that particular class, we'll be glad to do a private lesson that's mutually accommodating to your schedule and ours. And you come in, and we basically do the same thing, but only on a one-on-one or one-on-two or one or small group. If it's a few people sometimes can't make the class, we'll have a group lesson that we'll do together. So we have a variety of options. The other option is our Try It Before You Buy It program. And the nice thing about the Try It Before You Buy It program, you just come on down to the range, and for $25, which includes the cost of the firearm and the ammunition, you can go out on the range and you can try a couple of guns or one that you have in mind that we might have in stock. And we have about 25 or 30 different guns in stock. And again, they're the most popularly requested guns and different variations of those guns. And you can actually shoot the gun to find out if that's what you like. So there's a lot of opportunities for you to get involved. And I want to encourage you to either stop by the range at 2031 Dryden Road or give us a call at 293-3914, and we'll be more than glad to get you into whatever it is you're interested in.
Let's go out to the phones, Jeff. We've got some folks waiting. If you'd like to get on, give us a call at 457-1290. That's the number here into the studio, and John will get you up on the board. Let's go out and talk to Paul in Dayton right now, who has a question for us. Paul, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you. I'm interested in a carry license.
Okay.
I got 2-inch, 38 2-inch barrel. All I'm interested in is in a carry license. Well, how hard is it to get?
Oh, it's not very difficult at all. You need to take a class. The state requires the class be at least 10 hours in the classroom plus 2 hours on the range. Our class is a little bit longer than that. We have an attorney come teach the legal portion of our class, which is something that a lot of people who've taken that class have said is a tremendous additional value. And then once you have completed the class and you've completed the live fire certification process that's part of that class, you take your certificate, fill out the application that you can get from the sheriff's office, or you can download it from the attorney general's website. You fill out that application. The hardest thing about that application is writing down every address that you've lived at since you were 18 years old. But that's the toughest part of it. Once you do that, then you can submit that along with your fees, license fees, to the sheriff in the county in which you live or some adjacent county, and usually within 30 to 45 days, you'll have your license.
How hard did they say you have to put the target 25 yards?
Well, we don't do that at 25 yards. Because 25 yards is a little bit longer than the average person would need to defend themselves.
Yes, well, I thought.
Some places, depending on where they do their qualification, they might not have an option to go in at a closer distance. But because of the range at Sim Trainer, we can go anywhere from bad breath out to about 65 feet. So that's much more likely. Our qualification is all in 25 feet, not yards, and shorter.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, with a 2-inch barrel, I'd be lucky you hit the barn the target's hung on.
And again, the reason that we set the course up that way is because we look at the most likely situation and distance that you might be involved in a shooting if you were having to defend yourself. And
how much is that course you're talking about?
The class costs you $150. $150.
Okay, I couldn't understand your phone numbers. 293 what?
3914.
What?
293-3914.
3914.
That's
14?
14, correct.
3914.
That's the
correct
one.
293-3914. Well, thank you.
Okay, hey, give us a call.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's talk to Bill in Beaver Creek, who has a question. Welcome to the show.
I had a couple of questions.
Okay.
One of them is on if you have a concealed carry license, which I do, and transporting it in a vehicle. I've read in two different places. One said if you had it in the glove box, it had to be locked. The other one said you could have it unlocked if you have a concealed carry permit.
The question really is the two answers that you got are based on the time. In 2008, the law was changed to allow you to have a loaded handgun in a glove box or now also a console, and it does not have to be locked. It just
right.
has to be closed.
Okay, so the one that said it had to be locked was an old one.
That's correct.
Okay. The other thing I had was on, like, if you own a 12-gauge shotgun and put a pistol grip on it, is that legal or do you have to register it and pay the $200 to the ATF?
Oh, no, it's perfectly legal to have a shotgun with a pistol grip. It's just not a handgun.
Right.
Okay. I mean, that doesn't turn it into a handgun, so it doesn't apply for concealed carry, and it can't be loaded in your vehicle. But no,
right,
having a pistol grip on a shotgun is not illegal. That was
something
that was during the Clinton gun ban. Between 1994 and 2004, that there were restrictions on newly manufactured guns could only have a certain number of features of a particular list. That expired in 2004 and hasn't been renewed, and I doubt seriously that it will be. So that's not a problem.
Okay. Have they passed that thing yet on being able to, like, carry into a restaurant that serves liquor if you're not drinking?
No, it hasn't yet passed. They still are. It is currently out of committee. And it is on the floor of the House, and there is some indication that it may get voted on this week. We had another report of that earlier last week or the week before, but there have been a few things going on in the Ohio House of Representatives, so that was one of the things that kind of fell off the plate for the last week or so. So, but that is something that is certainly of high interest to a lot of people, including many of the legislators, and that will be moving forward very soon, we expect.
Yeah, because a lot of time we'll go out to dinner somewhere, and it'll be a restaurant where they serve liquor, but I'm not drinking.
Right.
And I have to leave my weapon in the car or not take it with me or whatever.
Right, and leave it in your car where you aren't.
Right.
Exactly.
All right. That's all I got.
Well, thanks very much for calling the show.
All right, thanks a lot.
Okay, one follow-up to Bill and the rest of our listeners reference the length of the shotgun. Even if you have the pistol grip under that, and I'll check this to make sure, you're still going to have it so that the barrel is at least 18 inches long, and the overall length of the gun has to be at least 26 inches long, even if you have that pistol grip on there. So that's going to be one of the issues that comes into play with the modification of a shotgun. But I will tell you that the way most of the shotguns are set up with the size of the receiver, the size of the barrels that are issued without being sawed down, it's not going to be an issue. So it's got to have at least 18-inch-long barrel, and the overall length of the gun from the back of the pistol grip to the end of the muzzle would have to be at least 26 inches.
And a lot of times people will add a pistol grip to a gun and not take the stock off, and so then that doesn't change the length of the gun.
Right, exactly.
But the addition of a pistol grip doesn't change the gun into anything that's required a registration under the National Firearms Act. All right, well, let's go out and see if we can get one more call in before the break, and let's talk to John in Dayton. Welcome to the show.
Hi. It's my understanding that that Obamacare bill that passed, the one that Nancy Pelosi says you have to pass it before you can find out what's in it, there's some gun control laws in that bill. Is that true or not?
There's a lot of rumors about that, but so far I've not found anything in there, and I grant you it is over 2,000 pages, and I have not read every single one of them. But there were some rumors that went out regarding the fact that there were going to be registrations and reporting and various other things. As far as anybody that I've talked to has been able to find, that's not the case. But there is some legislation that has to do with registration and what they're calling the National Instant Check System Improvement, which would not actually improve it. It would radically change it, and it would add some kinds of registration. It's basically the anti-gunner's dream of let's let the government be in control of the people instead of the other way around. So I don't really think that that's going to get any legs. There are obviously some sponsors to that bill, partly because they market it a little bit better this time than they have in the past, but it still is a very anti-gun bill. It's opposed by all of the firearms community, and there is a substantial majority of pro-firearms folks in both the House and the Senate, even though the Senate is in the hands of the Democrats. It's simply, my personal opinion is it's not going to go anywhere. I know that none of our local legislators have signed on to that, so I don't think that that will be a problem, and as far as I know, there's nothing that relates to it in the health care bill.
I just want to mention one thing as a follow-up to that. It's kind of a good thing that these people are scurrying around to try to pass additional legislation because that tells us that they're scurrying around in a desperate act to try to make some modifications. We just have to be diligent and vigilant in watching those things. And like Mark said earlier, if we're able to monitor that bill, and I'm sure people are going to be watching for specific language that might come out of that quote healthcare unquote bill to find out if there's anything that could kind of backdoor us, and they'll be alert to those kinds of things.
Yeah, the Senate version of that bill is a Senate 436. It was introduced by our good friend Chuck Schumer, who is never one to stand by and take a second seat to anyone when it comes time to getting camera time or anti-gun bills. We're going to need to take a break here and pay a few bills. We will be back after this break and talk to several people. If you'd like to get on the air, give us a call at 457-1290. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro in for Shooting from the Hip. Let's go back out to the phones right away and talk to Greg, who's calling from Bellbrook, has a question about a new gun he's just got. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Yeah, I got this Walther PK380 in I think it was February. I got it for my wife. We're going to take the conceal class, but I've been shooting it in my backyard. I've got a lot of space out there. And I've just been standing up and firing it from probably about 15 yards, and it just seems like the spread of my range of my targeting is all over the place, 7-8 inches. I can't get it in. And I've heard a lot of people say guns need to be broken in, and I've put about 400 rounds through it, so I don't know if that's the case or if I need to get a little closer with something that small or if I'm doing something wrong, because I also have a 1911 with that thing, I'm dead on, and I'm just kind of all over the place with this PK380. So,
well, you're right on the mark with your thinking. It's that you need to bring it into closer range, and I'd like to encourage you to give some thought to, depending on your availability of your space, you want to get that gun's, I'm going to say, optimal range would be between 15 and 30 feet. Okay. And that gun, remember, is just a quick point and shoot self-defense gun. It's not designed for 45 to 75 foot target, you know, accuracy shooting. It can be accurate. And I will just tell you that an experienced shooter, if they'd put it on a bench rest, they'd be reasonably accurate. And interestingly enough, your 8-inch groups at 45 feet don't concern me. Because if you look at that gun being a self-defense gun, 8-inch groups at 45 feet would be very reasonable if you consider the shape and size of a human torso, if that would be the gun that you're going to use it for. However, your thinking is proper that you need to, first of all, bring your targets in, sight it in first at 15 feet, then 25 feet, and then variations, distances in between there, and you'll be better off. Now, one thing, I'm glad you brought that gun up, because it's not a bad gun, but there's one thing I don't know if you realized from an inexperienced shooter's standpoint. That gun, once you cock it, it's in the single action mode with the hammer to the rear with no decocking option other than to pull the trigger and safely lower the hammer, which,
right,
being a 1911 person, you obviously know that that's the option. But if you're going to give that to your wife, that's something you need to give some serious thought to, because I would tell you, as a professional that's been doing this for a long time, that's one of the last guns I'd put in her hands, just for that very reason. It's just not, it's not as safe for the people that's not a person that's not as familiar with the gun. Good quality gun, shoots pretty well. I don't think the issue of its inaccuracy, based on what you told me on your initial firing it, is a problem, but the safety is the issue I'd be concerned about and just ask you to give some thought to.
And it's not it's not so much that the gun is inherently unsafe on its own, but that it forces you to do some things that create habits that could make you unsafe pretty readily.
Right. Yeah, I thought it was strange how it just has that little rotating mechanism to where if you want to decock the gun, you actually have to pull the trigger.
It kind
of goes against your instincts, really.
Well, your instincts are sharp. That's one of the reasons why we don't recommend that. Thanks for calling the show. We do have other folks on the line, but as you can hear on the music, that we are headed into the break and going over to the news center with Charles Van Sant. Lots of good information, and we may talk about one of those stories when we come back as well. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Be back here? I'm here. I don't know what the deal is. I'm not. There we go. Am I on? Can you hear me now? All right. I'm not hearing myself, so we are on the air, and want to thank Uncle Ted for bringing us back in. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro. We are here for Shooting from the Hip, and we are glad to have you back with us. There's some interesting things that have been going on, and we thank everybody who's given us a call. If you'd like to be part of the show, give us a call at 457-1290. 457-1290 is the number here into the studio, and John will take your call and get you up on the board. We do have one call on the line, so that leaves a few open lines for you to call in at 457-1290. There's one story that I heard at the news break, and if you've been listening through the news break, you probably heard it too, that last night, Friday night, that there was a shooting in the Big E Bar downtown in Dayton, and the shooting began inside the bar, and I'm wondering, my first thought is, well, clearly that story must be wrong, since it's illegal to have guns in bars. That would be a felony all by itself. I mean, isn't that true, Jeff? Isn't that a wrong thing to do?
You're exactly right.
Oh. So clearly that's if that story is not right, somebody was already violating the law just walking in the door carrying that firearm. But here's the other thing, and part of the reason I wanted to bring this up is because we know that as soon as the anti-gun crowd gets a hold of this, they're going to say, oh, well, that's, you know, guns and alcohol don't mix. And obviously that's the problem. The gun was there. That's the problem. I would argue the opposite side, and that is that this guy who was killed in the bar had been disarmed by state law and could not defend himself. Now, would that have changed the character of this discussion or whatever it was that caused the shooting, whatever it was that prompted this situation that ended in the shooting? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe if the guy who had gone in there didn't think he was the only one with a gun, maybe he would have been a little bit more careful. Maybe he would not have escalated the situation. Maybe as the criminal, he would have been the one that got shot by the law-abiding citizen who was just, you know, I have no idea what the situation was. But one thing I do know is that walking in the door with a gun was illegal. Shooting somebody is illegal. And one illegal thing and making one of those, or in fact, both of them already illegal, didn't stop it from happening. And so changing that so that at least a law-abiding citizen could be able to defend themselves isn't going to make it happen anymore.
Well, the other side of that, Mark, is that it just shows another example of the passage of more laws isn't going to stop law violators from violating the law. That's plain and simple.
How about that?
We mentioned it several weeks ago out in Arizona when people rushed to the front and said, you know, we need to pass more laws to make sure they don't have guns within 1,000 feet of congressmen and things like that. It's not going to stop bad guys from doing bad things, plain and simple. And we just got to stop the madness. So I'm glad Mark was able to kind of preempt that. And obviously the anti-gunners are going to, if they get a hold of it, they're going to run with that. But it's basically baseless. The bad guys are going to do what they want no matter what the law is.
That's right. And so the more that law-abiding citizens are able to stop bad guys from doing the bad things while they're in the middle of doing it, the better. That's typically how an active shooter situation is stopped. Usually the shooter is dead at the end of the situation. And the question then becomes how many other people are also dead as a result. And our opinion is if the bad guys would just shoot themselves first, then they could get all the press they wanted. And it would be over and nobody else get hurt. Since that's simply not going to be the case, maybe if more law-abiding citizens were prepared to deal with a violent encounter with the tools and the skills and the willingness to take aggressive action to stop a dangerous threat at the time that it happens, then there would be less of it that happens and there would be fewer people who would be left to do those bad things. Let's go out and chill out for a second. Let the blood pressure drop down and talk to Mark in Springboro, who has a question for us. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot. I have a quick question. I took your the basic handgun course at SimTrainer, and it was a terrific course. One of the things that you guys stressed was that it's a lead safety is something that you stress, so that the ammo that you use there is full metal jacket.
Right.
Well, for 22s, you usually can't get full metal jacket for 22s, but we do use coated ammunition. It has a kind of a copper wash over the front of the bullet. But
well, and that was exactly my question, because the rimfire ammo is a lot cheaper to use for target practice.
Sure.
And I'm looking at buying my first handgun, and so I'm looking at 22s, and I just wanted to make sure that there is some acceptable 22 ammo for your range and that's, you know, lead safe ammo. Okay.
Mark, you got to understand that the lead issue is mostly for the instructors. When Mark and I are out there week in and week out with 8, 10, 12, 15, up to 20 shooters, it's our exposure that's the real problem. Now, I don't want to minimize the potential significance of lead in the human body causing detrimental effects, but in the 25 plus years I've been in law enforcement and dealing with firearms, it's so nominal an issue that it's not worth discussing, other than in the context of people like myself running a range on a regular basis being exposed. You going out and shooting once a week, twice a week, whether or not you had lead exposed bullets isn't going to be an issue for you per se. It's just going to be an issue that we want to try to minimize the potential short, midterm, and long term hazards of our shooters over the long haul down the range. And with 22 ammunition, there's not much we can do. Some of it has like it's a coating that they put over top of it, and it suffices. And the other precaution we take, unlike other ranges, instead of that lead bullet hitting a steel plate and disintegrating and the lead particles going into the air, our bullets are absorbed into the rubber, and so there's little to no chance of that dispersion of the lead particles going up in the air. And if there is, it's minimized.
Most of the lead that is that you would breathe in, and that's what we're really concerned about, most of that isn't coming from the bullet itself anyway. The primer compound is in most rounds is a lead stiffenate compound, and so there's a little puff of gaseous lead that comes out with the burn powder at every time the gun is fired. And of course we mitigate that at an indoor range by having our air handler blow the all the exhaust downrange and then suck it out and exchange the air about 50% every time we when the air cycles. So that's a little bit less of the problem. But when you have a class, and like that class, when we have everybody standing in the stall and shooting at the same time, even that overwhelms the air handlers a little bit. So we typically will have people use what we call clean fire ammo. That's a one particular brand name. It's also Wind Clean is Winchester's brand, PMC E-Range, or basically non-toxic metal-free stuff that, you know, that doesn't have any lead in the primer, and that's where most of the airborne lead comes from and around like that.
And that's available for rimfire ammo as well?
No, and that's the problem. And we don't use that, and we can't use that for rimfire because it's just they just simply don't make it.
Okay. So, but I guess my question is, if I'm about to purchase a handgun and I want it to be a 22, is that something I'm going to be able to use at your range?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We use the 22 in our first shots class, for example. So, yeah, that's not a problem.
Okay,
yeah.
That's great.
That's a good question, and you just brought up that issue because a lot of people will ask that. But the big thing to remember is when you, the individual shooter, are going to the range, as long as you wash your hands after you've shot, you're going to greatly minimize just by going to a good quality range that has a good air handling system, and then you use good hygiene by washing your hands. You're going to minimize, if not almost totally eliminate, the problems that can be associated with lead in the infrequent visits that you would have. And it's not really that big of a problem.
And, of course, it's more of an issue in an indoor range than it would be in an outdoor range. And, you know, so, you know, there's a lot of people that shoot outdoors and in their backyards. And that's just really not very much of a problem in that regard. Mark, thanks very much for calling the show. Let's talk to Robert in Riverside, who has a question for us. Robert, welcome to the show. Hello. Are you still there, Robert? We're looking.
Yeah, here I am.
Okay, good.
Okay,
there you are.
What's the difference between single action and double action, and what's the pros and cons of owning a pistol with a hammer on it?
Okay, great question.
Yeah, well, basically, to the lay listener out there who doesn't have much experience with guns, single action, double action can essentially be broken down to this. If you just look at a standard revolver like you saw in an old Western John Wayne movie, that gun can be fired basically in two ways. With the hammer forward, you pull on the trigger, the hammer comes back, and then at some point there's a break where the hammer falls forward and the gun goes off. The double action element is that you have to pull the trigger and it initiates the hammer going to the rear, at which point it breaks free and the gun goes off. That gun could also be fired in sometimes in the single action mode where you would cock the hammer to the rear, and then all you have to do is pull the trigger and the hammer just falls down, hence only one action being required per se. With semi-automatic pistols, it's a little bit different, and Mark's going to get in here and give you a little bit different variation. But the semi-automatic pistols you have, many of them are double action or on the first trigger pull, meaning you pull the trigger and the hammer goes to the rear, and at some point the break occurs and the hammer falls forward. So you're pulling the trigger and the hammer is going back simultaneously.
And those are the two actions of the double
action. Those are the two actions of the double action. You can also cock that hammer and essentially make it a single action gun on the semi-automatic pistols. So to the lay listener, that's one variation, and Mark will jump in and give a little bit different.
I want to head off some of the arguments that we're going to get from the folks in the Single Action Shooting Society, because the John Wayne Western, that gun probably was a single action only revolver. It was a single action revolver. You had to cock the hammer before you could pull the trigger. So it's more modern guns that are the double action, and the typical revolver that you see now is a double action revolver. The cylinder swings out of the frame and you can either cock the hammer first and then pull the trigger, or you can pull the trigger with the hammer down and it will cock the hammer and fire the gun, which is the double action, the single action being you cocked it first and then it drops the hammer. So
I will also note that out of necessity with the revolver, the double action revolvers, the pulling of the trigger also rotates the cylinder to a location where the subsequent round will be lined up properly for it to go off. People like to think that it's the round that's underneath the hammer at the time you pick up the gun that fires, but it's actually, depending on the rotation of the cylinder, it's the one that's at 11 o'clock or 1 o'clock that will actually go off, because as you pull the trigger, the cylinder will either rotate counterclockwise or clockwise and then set in that location, and the subsequent round will go off.
So now let's get back to his other question, which is, you know, should you have a gun with a hammer or not?
Yeah.
And for a revolver, if you have the reason a lot of the revolvers have no longer have a hammer that you can see is because of concealed carry. And if the hammer is exposed, when you'd go to draw that firearm from wherever it's concealed, it is possible to get caught on clothing and make it and hinder the draw in some way. So That's one of the reasons why they have either buried the hammer inside the frame or they have cut the thumb spur off the top of the hammer so that you just have the hammer that hits, but it doesn't stay in the single action mode. It can only be fired double action.
So, okay, I got you.
So really the trade-off is if you cannot fire it in single action mode, it is a little bit more, it's going to have a heavier and longer trigger pull, and some people have trouble doing that accurately. It's not the gun that's less accurate, it's just that some people have trouble doing it that way. But it does give you the option of doing that if you have a hammer with a spur.
There's one other issue that comes up while we're on the topic of double action, single action, is that there's some people that come to the range, they say they just got a revolver, and when they get on the line the first time, they cock the hammer for the first time, they're going to start shooting it in the single action cocked mode. The problem with that, if you're just doing basic target shooting for the heck of it or for fun of it, that's a lot of fun. But from the standpoint of the perspective of self-defense, it's not really practical, because it's basically two physical skills that you have to perform to get the gun to go off. You have to cock it to the single action mode, then you have to pull the trigger. And under high stress, that'll be extremely difficult to accomplish.
Robert, thanks very much for calling the show. Let's move on and see if we can get one more call in before the break and talk to Matt in Englewood, who has a question about the difference in shotguns for deer hunting.
Yes.
And for bird hunting.
Thank you for taking my call. I do have a question about deer hunting. I'm looking to acquire a shotgun for deer hunting, but also wondering if I could also use that same shotgun to go duck or goose hunting, and if so, wonderful. If not, tell me what you would recommend.
Well, here's the deal. For deer hunting, you need to have, you're going to use a slug, and so there's going to be rifling involved. Now, sometimes you can get it on the, you can get a rifled slug, or you can get a barrel that has rifling in it. A rifled barrel for a shotgun cannot be used for bird hunting, but you can, sometimes you'll get a shotgun and it'll have more than one barrel. So you'll have a rifled barrel for deer hunting and then a smooth barrel that's choked then for the bird hunting.
Yes.
And so you can do that with both.
Yeah.
All right. Now, I've heard also somebody has said something about a pump action, and I'm wondering if that's something you would recommend.
We need to take a break, and we'll get that question answered when we come back from the break. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip. I'm Jeff Pedro in with Mark Avery. And right before the break, Matt had talked a little bit about the difference between pump shotguns and semi-auto shotguns, and I don't know specifically what his question was referenced to that issue, but I just want to say, when you're hunting, the bottom line, like so many other aspects of shooting, it's going to come down to what you're comfortable with. Semi-automatic versus a pump action shotgun, you can be equally accurate, and they have all kinds of configurations with different barrels, smoother action, whatever it is you want. So the bottom line there is going to be just practice with whatever you're going to end up going out and hunting with.
One person called while right before the break and was unable to hang on and had a question about no carry signs when the entrances are, or the signs are posted at the entrance to a parking lot. Now, if it says that the premises are off limits for carry, what that really applies to in terms of a legal perspective is that you can still go into the parking lot and leave your gun in the car, but even if the doors of the buildings themselves are not posted, that sign at the parking lot applies to the buildings and it covers the entire premises. If they were going to have a problem with you having a gun in your vehicle, they would have to sue you. There is no criminal charge that can be associated with you having your own gun in your vehicle, in accordance with your normal carry permission and, you know, your whatever method of carry that you have. If you're licensed to carry a concealed handgun, obviously it can be loaded. If you're not licensed, you can still have a gun unloaded in the car. And unloaded, of course, means that there's nothing in the gun and that no magazines or speed loaders can be loaded either. So I just wanted to give a quick answer to that. Let's go out and talk to Bernard, who's calling from us. Welcome to the show. I'm hearing you. Are you still there? I think we might have lost him. Now, let's go to Randy, who has a question. Randy, are you with us?
Yes.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. How can we help you? We got about a couple of minutes.
Okay. I heard a story last year about a guy that was shot with a gun using Glazer safety slugs, and the police automatically assumed it was a professional hit, I guess, so to speak. Are there any laws against using Glazer safety slugs? After hearing that, it just kind of remained a question.
The only laws are laws of physics in that regard. It's not a, it doesn't penetrate very well, and so it's not a very effective round for personal defense. But there's no prohibition in Ohio, and of course that, you know, there's laws all over the country that have different prohibitions on different types of ammunition. But there's no law in Ohio that prevents you from using a Glazer safety slug. We just don't recommend it because they don't penetrate very well.
Well, you know, they came out with that new one with the silver tip that has better penetration. Have you had any experience with that?
No, I have not.
Jeff? Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Well, thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out to George, who's got a call calling from Dayton. George, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. I'm calling with a question about liability. I've heard there's a movement afoot in some circles so that if a person is legally carrying a firearm and discharges that firearm to try to neutralize a crime in progress, not self-defense, but a crime in progress, then that person who has discharged their firearm to neutralize the crime in progress cannot be held legally responsible for consequences of that. For example, if a person shoots in the direction of a person who's holding up a store and they miss, but they hit a child standing 100 feet beyond that person, they cannot be held legally liable because they were using a legal firearm trying to neutralize a crime in progress. And I don't know the law in Ohio, but I've read several instances where there's a move afoot to make that happen in some states. And I'd like to hear your comments, please.
Well, legally liable is going to be different from criminal responsibility. And civilly, right now as it stands, we can be held accountable civilly for most anything we do or don't do in that regard or any other regard for that matter. So I think there's no specific law in the books, but civilly that we can be sued for anything. And I'm not aware of any specific legislation. We'll certainly check into that that issue, and we'll check back or report back next week.
There is a provision in Ohio law that when you're defending yourself, that in theory they're not supposed to be able to, the bad guy's not supposed to be able to sue you or the bad guy's family. But that's not been tested, and anything's possible because all they have to do is file suit, and that doesn't, you know, there's nothing that can stop them from filing suit. We're out of time. Stay tuned now for There Is a Season with Bob Wolf, right after the news with Charles Van Sant in the News Center. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.